Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.
Jim Potts back on the air, and as always, thank you so much for tuning in and listening to me and sharing your Sunday evening with me. I really do appreciate that. Hey, today we're going to be talking about social media. I got to tell you that they have so failed to identify and remove extremism off of their sites, and I'll be talking about that in a little bit. Organizations like Facebook, and I'll get into that. And the second thing we're going to be talking about is just aggressive road rage statistics. On occasion, I do talk about that. I talk about that in my trainings as well when we do the active shooter training when my team is out there. But I've got some additional information that I wanted to share with you that I came across. And the third thing we're going to talk about is entitled, Are You a Target? Basically, I'm going to tell you what to look out for. All right? So we'll be going through that. It's about a three-step approach that you need to be aware of. And the last thing I'm going to do, if we have time, is to talk about an historical piece of domestic terrorism that's going to somewhat surprise you when I tell you who the players were with this. Meanwhile, hey, if anybody wants to call in, I'm always happy to get a call. If I don't, you know me, I'm just going to run through the material and give you information and go from there. So get your pens and paper ready as always. But if anybody wants to call in or has a comment that they want to make or with a question, you can call me at 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. Or you can email me, as so many people do. I'm going to be emailing, reading some of the emails as I always do. You can email me at listenupwithjp@pottsandassociates.com. That's listenupwithjp@pottsandassociates.com. And if you want to get on my blog for my email blast about the upcoming shows, just text Potts Associates and text that to 22828 and enter your email. Again, text Potts Associates, text that to 22828 and enter your email. Okay, let's get busy. Hey, before we get started on the regular program here, I got to tell you something. Remember last week when I was talking to you about the scams to watch out for in 2019, and you might also remember that I've told you about this one email with all this money somebody wants to give us from overseas. You're not going to believe it. 2 days later, I actually did get another one. I got to share this with you just to prove my point. Now, this was sent to me on April 5th, I guess it was, from the desk of Dr. Mark William, Director of Finance, Ministry of Finance, from Republic of Togo. And it says, attention, dear beneficiary. With due respect, please be informed that we have received an approved payment file from the Federal Ministry of Finance in conjunction with International Monetary Fund to compensate scam victims, and your name and email address was among the listed victims of scam from Africa. I write to inform you that we will be sending you, sit down now, hold on to yourself, you guys. I write to inform you that we'll be sending you $5,000 daily from our office here, as we have been given the mandate to transfer your full compensatory payment of $100,000 by the International Monetary Fund and Federal Ministry of Finance. Excuse me. Your personal identification number. Okay, so to give me this personal identification number, I'm not going to give it to you guys because I don't want any of you guys turning around trying to get this $5,000. I'm just kidding. But anyway, no, you will have to send us immediately your full receiving information as stated below for us to commence the wire transfer of your funds to you through Western Union without any mistake. And what do they want to know? My full name, my address, my phone numbers. We await your urgent response to enable us to proceed with the payment wire transfer as soon as you comply with our directives. Can you believe that? Look, you guys, if you get one of these, don't fall for that scam. But I had to read that to you because I had just gotten that, and now I've had an opportunity to read it to you, and you could hear it for yourself. $5,000, up to $100,000. Give me a break. But at any rate, don't fall for that stuff, guys. Okay, I want to send a shout-out to one of our actually it's one of our clients that actually had a situation, and they went through our Violence in the Workplace Preparedness Program, and they actually had a situation down at their dealership where a knife-wielding man claiming to be the devil vandalized the dealership, and the employees actually had to follow things that we had discussed, and they were actually able to subdue the person and hold them there until local law enforcement arrives. But this guy vandalized over 30 cars, causing about $100,000 in damages. And the employees and the police were able to detain the man. So I want to say, they knew who they are, so I'm not going to put their name out there. But I know that they do listen, so I'm sending a shout-out to them to tell them good job. This guy had even smashed windshields, slashed tires, scratched paint, and carved satanic imagery into cars parked at the dealership. Yeah, this is insane. But I'm just telling you, there's people out there that are like this. So shout-out to them. They did an excellent job. They followed some of the points and everything that we had made, and job well done. Okay, let's do this now. Let's look at some of these emails. Jim, I know you stay up on police officers getting killed in the line of duty. Do you have a count so far for 2019? Tim from St. Louis, Missouri. Well, Tim, yes, I do, as a matter of fact. And to the other listeners, let me tell you something. You know I'm big on this as an issue. I do like to keep up with this. So far, you guys, this year, now this is only, what, the beginning of April? We got 30 officers down. And it varies. Some of them by accident, automobile crashes, inadvertent gunfire, actually heart attacks, struck by a vehicle assaults. Anyway, 13 by gunfire. Total deaths for the month of January, 10. February, there were 11. March, there were 8, and there's already one in April. Now, I also took a look at, I wanted to know by state, the total deaths by state. Illinois is leading the pack, but I don't think you're surprised about that. There's been a lot happening out there in Illinois. They've had 4 of them, and Texas is second with 3. 27 males and 3 females, just to let you know so far. Again, I'm not going to beat this into the ground or anything. You know how I feel about it. But condolences to all of those families out there that have lost a family member in the line of duty. Okay. Hope that answers your question, Tim. Jim, remember your show about teachers with guns in the classroom? You were dead set against it, and you were right. Did you hear about the teacher who had a gun in the classroom full of first graders? He discharged his weapon. How stupid. You know, no guns in the classroom with a couple of exclamation points out of it. Susan from Roanoke, Virginia. Yes, Susan, I did hear about that. For those of you who did not hear about that, let me share the information with you. And Susan, just to be clear, the person was actually a substitute teacher. And look, this was a 74-year-old substitute teacher that had a gun in his pocket that discharged in a first grade classroom. It was in an elementary school out there in Alabama, actually. And, you know, he got arrested, as he probably should have, because, for one thing, a student actually ended up getting injured. Now, I'm not going to give you his name, but it's out there if you want to Google it yourself. But he's been charged with possession of a deadly weapon on school grounds. And he's also charged with third-degree aggravated assault and reckless endangerment. See, if you guys remember, this is the problem with having guns. I talk about the liability of this and being careful. We talked about teachers with guns in the classroom. And again, if anybody wants to call and comment, please feel free. You know, to me, it's a bad deal. Now, I can tell you that in the state of Alabama, it actually allows school administrators to carry guns on our school property. You know, as long as they have qualified for a new program that Alabama has instituted. But again, I think this stuff is problematic. This guy's got a gun in his pocket. He's 74 years old. Somehow or another, the gun discharges, and now an innocent kid, gets hurt, and now he's heading off to jail. Having these guns is not always such a good thing. And I will tell you that the experts say that negligent discharges of firearms are a significant risk when guns are allowed on a campus, especially when they're carried by civilians. You've heard me preach this. It's hard enough for police officers sometimes But civilians, I think it gets out of control. And I can tell you that there's been some chatter out there on the internet. The police departments all across the country have reported a significant number of negligent discharge incidents. And, you know, and I'm just telling you, this can even happen with police officers as well. So with civilians, sometimes it could be worse. And look, don't send me the hate mail. I know that there are some qualified civilians out there that have their guns, that are into safety. They're very careful. I get all of that. But if we just stick with the main issue here about teachers with guns in the classroom, it is just a bad idea. You know, if there's a situation that arises, they need to go ahead and follow the safety procedures that the school has taught them, you know, hunker down, you know, shelter in place, et cetera. So, yeah, Susan, I did hear about that, and that's the information. Yeah, I agree, no guns in the classroom. At any rate, okay, the third email. Jim, please bring it to your listeners' attention that school shootings have sad residual effects on the survivors. A Parkland shooting survivor has recently taken her life. I also heard that the father of a Sandy Hook victim also has taken his life now. This is horrible. I just wanted to mention this. Alice from New Orleans. Yes, I did hear about that as well, obviously. I do try to stay up on top of this. And by the way, Alice, that was the second Parkland shooting survivor that did this as well. These individuals sometimes are, you know, remorseful in terms of what's happening to their friends. And sometimes they just don't get over it. You know, they think about them at certain times, from what I understand, like at graduation times or, you know, the prom and things of that nature. And it really does have a significant effect on them. The dad, who, as I understand it, he had lost a daughter at Sandy Hook. I think she was a first grader, as I recall. And he just never got over that. I mean, it's sad. There's no doubt about it that people have these residual effects that people just don't think about. You know, but there is a lasting impression on these people to lose loved ones under these kind of circumstances. You know, and if anybody out there is listening has been in a situation like this, look, there's help out there for people. So if you have these situations, or if you recognize a family member or a friend is having a hard time coping with this, look, encourage them to get some kind of help. Because it's sad to be able to hear later on about the fact that they've taken their lives. And this is all because of somebody that had issues. And they just don't understand the long-term effects on this on other people. So even though a person doesn't get killed that day, there's a residual effect where later on it impacts them so bad that they do things like this. So sad but true. At any rate, our condolences go out to both of those families as well. Okay, let's get into this piece talking about the social media. Let me tell you something. I'm at war with them. You know, because I'm going to tell you something. I contend that Facebook only monitors sites in reaction to complaints of extremism and hate speech. But they don't have an adequate site reporting system. And they're also not proactive in preventing extremist groups from operating sites on this platform. So what I'm telling you by this is that, because I've already told you that people get radicalized. Where are they getting radicalized? Off the internet. They're using these types of sites to get to people. And I get it. There's a lot of people probably on Facebook as one example. There's a lot of people out there with this, and it's hard for them probably to get every single person, pinpointed that's creating these problems. I do understand that Facebook will react if somebody brings it to their attention, but they're not doing the monitoring from what I understand. And I'm going to tell you something. We have to do more. We have got to stop extremist radicalization on the internet. It's creating a problem for this country, and it's not just for this country. I shouldn't say that. It's really a worldwide situation because Facebook and these other organizations like this, they're worldwide as well. So these people are reaching people. They've got to do something. You know, Facebook is one example. They need to improve its reporting features and the analysts, you know, need to be trained so that questionable pages violating the standards are identified and removed more rapidly, you know, and readily. Because, again, you know, the kids are looking at this also. And it's not just kids. I shouldn't just say kids. We need to watch them a little bit closer. There's adults that are getting radicalized also. Because I'm going to tell you, as long as extremist groups continue to produce compelling propaganda that plays a part in inspiring and inciting individuals to violence and remains easily acceptable online, terrorism in the name of these extremist groups will remain a threat worldwide. Write to your congressmen. You know, write to your senators. Write to them and tell them, hey, look, you need to be monitoring Facebook better. All right? Tell them whatever we have to do. Because this is out of line. And it's not going to get any better unless we become proactive with this. So write to your congressmen, write to your senators. Of course, don't mention my name. No, I'm just kidding. But write to them. Tell them this is what we have to do. Because this is something that we can't control. Now, let me give you some findings as well. Right now, from what I understand, there's about 26 individuals that consumed official extremist propaganda successfully. These 26 individuals, they carried out or facilitated terror attacks. And then many of these attacks occurred, you know, heading our way, New York, London. Some of it's been overseas in Brussels, et cetera. But Orlando, San Bernardino, Boston. At least 52 additional individuals have attempted to carry out or facilitate terror attacks. At least 52. It's only because of the fact that our government is being proactive in this area. The FBI, the CIA, et cetera, they're being very proactive here. So they've caught about half of them. But the other 26 I told you about, they have already carried out these different terror attacks. Again, not just here. We know about New York City. We know about, you know, Orlando, San Bernardino, and Boston. But outside of that, there's also some. Now, they've accessed and disseminated official extremist propaganda materials on a variety of the social networks. These individuals, that's what I'm telling you. It has included Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Google+, WhatsApp, Skype, Tumblr, and PalTalk. All of these different sites have to take responsibility for this. They've got to be monitoring this a lot better because the radicalization issue is a big concern for this country. They're reaching out to individuals, and to meet some of these people, I want to say are weak-minded to believe some of these things. They had one guy who was 19 years old, and he actually became radicalized on the YouTube when ISIS was actually slaying people, chopping their heads off and stuff. This guy became radicalized looking at that. I don't know how you could possibly endorse anything like that or look at that situation and say, I want to be one of those guys. That just doesn't make sense to me. But there's people out there like that with this twisted way of thinking. Now, they have at least 57 individuals that consume the official extremist propaganda or attempted to become foreign fighters as well. So it's more than just them doing something here or becoming radicalized. You have other individuals who are actually becoming, you know, fighters with some of these extremist groups. I think I mentioned a few weeks ago, this one guy is getting ready to get out of jail. He's actually served his 20 years, and he was a young man at the time that he did this. And all these 20 years that he's been in prison, and he's getting ready to get out in the next few months, he's never backed up on it. He has still been radicalized. He's still an extremist, and he's been doing propaganda right from prison. Now, sometimes people go, well, how can he do it from prison? Look, these guys have prisoners' rights. These guys are on the Internet. That's how they meet women, believe it or not. They meet women on the Internet. Some of them get married. You know, it's all because of the Internet. At any rate, it's got to be controlled better. Got to be controlled. Now, I will tell you that there's also been 72 individuals who consumed official extremist propaganda that contained explicitly violent content. And at least 25 individuals that accessed official extremist propaganda materials that provided instructions on how to prepare or execute violent attacks. Yeah, I mean, look, there's no secret about some of this. You can go on the Internet and just about find anything where people are going to tell you how to do certain things. We've got to address those issues. They've got people on there telling people how to make bombs. Those kind of things, to me, have to be shut down to a certain extent. And I'm not just talking about shutting down the business or shutting down the site, but there should be an issue that if you continue to let these things happen, then the government's got to take, more stringent action against them. Maybe fines. I don't know. Because you can't just shut, as an example, you're just not going to be able to shut down, at this point, Facebook, because it impacts, millions and millions of people at this point, maybe even billions. So there'd be some lawsuits coming up out of that. But maybe what they can do is fine some of these places, with this hefty money, fines, in the event that, they're not doing what they're supposed to do with some of this. And it was another 51 individuals who disseminated official extremist propaganda materials, and at least 59 consumed or discussed propaganda materials with another individual, which means people are sharing this information on the internet. So look, if you get something that's strange like this and people are sharing this and it comes across, your screen on your computer, to me, I would say report it, but, I'll leave that up to you. Everybody doesn't want to do that because it could trail back to you. And it could be, I get it. It could be problematic for you. But I will tell you that official propaganda materials produced by the media arms of groups like ISIS and Al-Qaeda, Taliban, and Al-Shabaab are intentionally crafted. This information that they're putting out there are intentionally crafted to radicalize, inspire, and incite individuals to violence. These groups have produced propaganda in different ways that they do it. They do it by text. They do it by audio. They do it by video. Music videos, by the way. They even put things in magazines. All of this has helped to convince individuals around the world to travel abroad to join extremist groups and to conduct deadly attacks in their home countries. All right? And, there's even times when they've offered specific guidance on how to do it. I mean, this is just totally insane. Now, we already know about what happened in Boston. We had two individuals there who detonated two homemade bombs, these two brothers, you might recall. I bet you can't remember how far back that was. That was, believe it or not, that was April 2013. So that's why I'm bringing them up, the Boston Marathon. These two brothers told investigators that they had built the bombs using instructions from Al-Qaeda and the Arabian Peninsula's Inspire propaganda magazine. You hearing me on this? This is out of a magazine that told them how to construct those bombs, and that's how they got it. This is totally, insane. They were two of the 26 I told you about not too long ago who successfully enacted an act of terror. And they were also two of the 25 individuals who accessed propaganda materials that provided instructions on how to prepare or execute violent terrorist acts. These guys are getting this off the internet. Official extremist group propaganda materials are easily disseminated and accessed on the internet. Media platforms, you got to understand, this is going to be problematic for us in this country. Well, it's worldwide. It's not just for us. But that's why I think the government needs to take a harder look at this. So that's what I say. Write to your congressman. Write to your, legislators, et cetera, and get them to start clamping down on some of this. We have to do it that way. Now, I can tell you that of the 160 individuals documented I'm on these different government sites, but they had 168 that were documented, at least 51 disseminated propaganda materials online, in person, and via mail. So don't overlook the mail. Don't overlook that people have these discussions with other people. That's what they do. They pull people in. They start off by having these general types of conversations with them, and if the person is leaning in that direction, they start gradually talking to them. That's what they do. And I can tell you that some of these extremist groups, when they lose control over territory where they are and their specific regions of operation, their ability to reach out and spread this propaganda online will allow them to continue to attract support from across the globe. ISIS is an example of that. ISIS now has been pushed out of Syria, from what I understand, but they're going underground with some of this. But the reality, remember, they were basically an army. Remember, I told you they're different than Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda goes from, you know, having these discussions with people and sending people out there to do things, whereas ISIS, they actually had an army that was doing this. And now, because of the fact that they're being pushed, you know, and then losing their ground and losing territory itself, now you got to be careful, because these people will start doing propaganda even more so to try to get their word out. So all of these soldiers are going to be new soldiers, but they're going to be different kinds of soldiers. They're not going to be the ones fighting on the ground. They will now be soldiers in terms of people that they reach on the internet, and they'll still follow these orders, the directives. They'll do all of those things. It's going to be a new way for them to make an adjustment, because we've been, you know, clamping down. I will say that's one thing about this administration. You know, he really pushed, you know, to end their the physical things that they were doing in terms of it being an army and working with some of the other governments. But I'm just telling you, it's going to be heading in a direction that they're going to be going underground with this. Now, I can tell you that as long as extremist groups continue to produce compelling propaganda that plays a part in inspiring and inciting individuals to violence, and it remains easily accessible online, terrorism in the name of these extremist groups will remain a threat worldwide. We're becoming a product of our own technology. You know, 40 years ago when we didn't have the internet or whatever, it would all have to be done by newspapers. Come on, the newspapers wouldn't have carried those kind of things. But now, everybody having this access because of technology, there's all kinds of different ways people can reach. It's on your phone. It's on TV. It's on the internet. It's all of these different ways. It's got to be all about being safe, guys. Now, let's talk about the type of extremists, because you hear me say about extremists, but I want you to understand that each individual is classified. So all these things that you hear me talking about, this guy was an extremist, he's an extremist, I need to give you some clarifications. And some of them could be in one or more categories, by the way. And that's based on his or her principal extremist activities. So if an individual was ultimately unsuccessful in carrying out his or her desired activity, the word attempted is added before the classification, attempted. Individuals are also specified to be facilitators if they work to facilitate extremist activities of others. A facilitator is one of the ones that's kind of behind the scenes, so to speak. You know, it's prompting others. Those are facilitators. Now, I'm going to give you some classifications. A foreign fighter? A foreign fighter is an individual who traveled to join an extremist group abroad. So that's why we call those a foreign fighter. Terrorist is an individual who carried out an act of terror. All right? That's a terrorist, carried out an act of terror. A financier. See, people don't think about the financiers. A financier is an individual who provides funds to an extremist group or known extremist group individual. As I told you, some of this money is coming out of this country and is being sent overseas. So even though they're not physically fighting, they're helping to finance it. A disseminator is an individual convicted for his or her propagation of extremist material online. They are disseminating information. So here's a guy sitting in his little hole somewhere, and he's on the internet, and he's putting this stuff out there. So he's not a person that's physically fighting anywhere. He's just sending information out to incite others to do his dirty work. All right? Now, a recruiter is an individual convicted for recruiting or inciting another individual to violence on behalf of an extremist group or other extremist activity. A supporter is an individual otherwise convicted for an offense relating to their support of whatever the extremist group was, as an example. I think this guy that's getting ready to get out of prison, I think he was a foreign fighter. Yeah, he was, because he actually got captured. He was the first American that was captured as a foreign fighter. And I think he was at Guantanamo. I think he was at Gitmo. But anyway, they brought him back, and he got 20 years. And like I said, now he's getting ready to get out. What's amazing to me is that we're talking about something from 20 years. He's already been in jail almost 20 years. That gives you an idea exactly how long some of this has been going on. And you would never even stop to think about that. At any rate, look, I can keep going and keep going and keep going on about this. I think the biggest thing for us to understand is that these social media platforms are being used to radicalize people. And I'm telling you, with the kids, watch your kids getting online with this. And if you're not sure they've got their computer password protected, get those passwords. You want to know what they're doing, what they're saying, and who they're talking to. There's no other way to be able to do it. I mean, I want to say let's start from the ground up, because the kids are the ones, because let's face it, one day they're the ones that's going to be in charge. Now, there's a scary thought for you. They're the ones that's going to be in charge. And they're getting all of this information in their heads because we as parents are not monitoring and making sure that these kids are not becoming radicalized. Okay? Okay. I think you got the gist of it. Like I said, write to your politicians. Tell them that, hey, you need to be monitoring Facebook and all these other sites that I told you about, these social media sites. They need to take a stronger approach. It's going to cost them money, but so what? They're making money off of us. So therefore, they need to get on there and make sure that they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. All right? They got to do their jobs, not just when somebody complains about somebody that's doing something inappropriate on their site. They need to be proactive and actually looking for some of this. That's got to be the deal. All right? Because they can eliminate a whole lot if they get a little bit more proactive with this. All right. If you got any questions or comments, like I said, you can always call me at 818-602-4929. All right. Let's move on here. You know, I want to talk to you about this business about the aggressive driving and road rage, because as I had mentioned to you before, I think that this is really out of control in so many respects. But there's more statistics out there with this, you know, and it all starts with this business about aggressive driving. And I'm going to tell you, aggressive driving really has been a problem on our roadways for a long time. And really the reality is it's getting worse. Incidents of screaming, rude gestures, and sometimes even violence are reported frequently now. More and more we're seeing this. And that's how it ended up being classified as this business called road rage. As a matter of fact, there's actually a definition for road rage that I'll give you. Road rage was coined, by the way, by a local news station in Los Angeles after a string of shootings occurred on several freeways in the city. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration defines road rage as when a driver commits moving traffic offenses so as to endanger other persons or property, an assault with a motor vehicle or other dangerous weapon by the operator or passenger of one motor vehicle on the operator or passengers of another motor vehicle. Now, there was a recent situation here. I don't know if you guys heard about that one, where this man, he's 20 years old. 20 years old. This is in Arizona. He's been arrested for road rage. He killed a 10-year-old Arizona girl. 10-year-old girl was killed by this guy. He's 20 years old. And he was booked first-degree murder and three counts of aggravated assault, all because of road rage. Now, basically, is what happened, I guess. He was driving. He had a white pickup truck. And he was driving, and I guess he began closely tailgating this family sedan, the people in front of him, which was carrying this little girl that got killed. And I guess he got upset, followed the family into a driveway where, without leaving his truck, he just opened fire before leaving. Now, nobody is sure yet, okay, because it's unclear what may have incited the incident. But, again, road rage was definitely a part of it. Now, the father of the little girl that got killed said he was ready just to start shooting. They weren't expecting that at all. He just opened fire on them. He shot the car, he shot me, and shot my house, and he killed my daughter. And this guy, I'm sitting up here looking at his picture, 20 years old. Mr. Gonzalez is 20 years old. And to take the life of a 10-year-old girl behind road rage, it's just sad. It's just sad. I mean, the mother speaks about it. You know, she wasn't hurt. But now here's a family that once again has to mourn the loss of a loved one, all due to road rage. And there's other stories like that. And I tell these in my active shooter classes about some of these things as well. But I want to give you some statistics on that because I want you to understand this. So what I've done, kind of came up with a road rage quiz for you. Now, you may think that road rage is something that only happens to other people, but the truth of it is, I got to tell you, many of us are guilty of aggressive behavior on the road. Now, I want you to ask yourself a couple of questions, and I want you to answer these honestly. All right, answer it honestly. Here we go. You ready? Do you regularly drive over the speed limit or try to beat red lights because you're in a hurry? Now, remember, this all starts with aggressive driving. Number two, do you tailgate or flash your headlights at a driver in front of you that you believe is driving too slow? Is that out there? Are you one of those people? Do you honk the horn often? There's horn honkers out there. The fourth one, and I'm going to keep it simple. These are just the four that I was going to ask you. Do you ever use obscene gestures or otherwise communicate angrily at another driver? I remember one of my fraternity brothers years ago, back when I was in college, you know, was upset, and we were roommates, and he came home, and he was all mad because of some issue with some guy in his car, and he got out with a hammer and knocked the guy's taillights out and also the guy's headlights when they had stopped at a traffic signal. That was definitely road rage, and that was a long time ago at this point. So this is not new. So you look at those questions that I just asked you and see if any of those situations you may fit in, because those situations could cause it. Now, let me just tell you, even if you answered no to the questions I just gave you, are you sure you aren't causing others to lash out with road rage? See, that's the real issue. That's the real issue. So do you frequently use your phone while driving or otherwise drive while distracted? Those are the kind of things that piss off people who are behind you. Do you keep your high beams on, regardless of oncoming traffic? Do you switch lanes or make turns without first using your turn signal? These are the things that can cause it. Do you fail to check your blind spot before switching lanes to make sure you aren't cutting somebody off? Now, see, even though you may not have intended it, and you wonder, why is that guy giving me the single finger salute as he goes by? Well, because of the fact that maybe you did something, even if you didn't realize it. Now, I'll tell you. Even if you answered yes to any of these questions, you may be contributing to causing road rage in others. That's the key. All right? While a violent reaction, you guys, to switching lanes without a turn signal isn't warranted, it's best to not put yourself in that situation to begin with. So follow the rules of the road. Now, I'm going to give you some road rage statistics here. You ready for that? Okay, here we go. 66% of traffic fatalities are caused by aggressive driving. 37% of aggressive driving incidents involve a firearm. Males under the age of 19 are the most likely to exhibit road rage. I don't know about that. I've seen a lot of older people doing it too. Half of drivers who are on the receiving end of an aggressive behavior such as horn honking, a rude gesture, or tailgating admit to responding with aggressive behavior themselves. And I can tell you that they did a study. Over a seven-year period, 218 murders and 12,610 injuries were all attributed to road rage. Now, I'll give you the last scary statistic here. 2% of drivers admit to trying to run an aggressor off the road. 2% have tried to run people off the road. Do me a favor. If you find that you've agitated another driver, whether the fault is yours or not, don't react to that nonsense or retaliate to the other driver. This is only going to cause it to escalate. Remind yourself that the other driver is just as bad. It's just bad at handling stress. Avoid the eye contact and continue to practice safe driving. That's what you need to do. Okay? Ignore these people. Remember, you got people home that love you, that may need your care, your comfort, your love, and maybe even your income. Why do you want to change all of that around for somebody you don't know? Think about that. Don't change your life behind somebody you don't even know. And don't assume you know something about somebody who you don't know. Never make that assumption. You can't assume something about somebody you don't know. You don't know what they're capable of doing. All right. Okay. Now, one last statistic. How many drivers experience extreme road rage? At least 8 million drivers engage in some type of road rage each year, guys. 80% of drivers admit to having some type of road rage during the course of a year. 80%. I'm just telling you, these numbers are shocking. And I will tell you, as I get ready to move on to my next piece for this episode, men exhibit signs of road rage more than women. Now, there's a shocker. Men really surpass women. However, it's the extreme road rage category. Men are three times as likely to get out of their car and fight the other driver. Okay? So, look. Don't be a part of that madness. All right? Move on. Think about the fact that you have people at home waiting for you to get there. And don't change your life behind somebody you don't even know. Okay. Now, the next major category that I wanted to talk, subject matter that I wanted to talk to you about today, is that whether or not, you know, you're a target. Now, look, threats can come in any shape or size. The significant ones are those that affect your business or your home or you as an individual. The first thing you need to do is to be able to identify. Now, just some basics. What do crooks look for? Why do burglars pick one house over another? Why does a terrorist look for a target? What do ordinary criminals and terrorists have in common, for that matter? Crooks and terrorists may not be so different. No matter how evil their intent, they must select a target in order to carry out their plan. Robbery suspects first look for the loot before planning their heist. Burglars look for evidence that no one is at home. And terrorists... Oh, I'm getting a call here. Hi, you're live on the air with Jim Potts on LA Talk Radio. Do you have a question or comment to share? Hello? Well, I don't know. And it's an 866 number, so I'm not sure if anything... Well, it looks like I may have lost them, that they may have hung up. So maybe it was an accidental call. That's from an 866 number, so that doesn't make sense to me. Anyway, let's keep moving. Look, just remember, they got an evil intent. They're going to select a target to carry out their plan. Robbery suspects, like I told you, they're going to look before planning. So you have to make sure that if you're not going to be at home, you close your blinds, you do the things, you can leave a light on, you can do any of those things. Okay? You can do any of those things. Now, I can tell you that robbery suspects are going to turn around. They're going to come in. I'm talking about robberies now when you're on the street. So you have to be careful with any of that. On the street situations are situations where they're looking for somebody that's been at an ATM. You just walked out of a bank. Sometimes these individuals will be in the bank and seeing you get some cash. So make sure when the teller is giving you your cash, have them put it in an envelope or something for you so nobody can see you double counting it, etc. Just watch. They'll count it out to you. It's all right. You want to be careful. Now, I can tell you that there was one well-known bank robber that was credited with the statement that he robbed banks because that is where the money is. A robber wants to gain something. That is a whole point to the crime. They want to make sure that the quick win is on hand. So they'll look for these things. And a lot of these crooks, they're out there feeding drug habits, gambling addiction, or even alcohol. So with these kind of cravings or obsessions, there's no time to waste. They're looking for something of value that can be turned around quickly for cash or traded for drugs. They move quickly. It's you paying attention to your surroundings. And I go through this all the time. I tell people in my classes, you know, we give the active shooter training, you've got to be aware of your surroundings at all times now. Because awareness is no longer about security, it's about survival. So, I call this, you know, they call this the three V's. Value, okay, that's number one. The goal is some kind of gain of value. So for a terrorist, their value may be high publicity, such as a famous building or critical infrastructure, a large number of potential victims. For crooks, it may just be something worth stealing. Now remember, with this one about value, think about 9/11. What did they go after? What did Osama bin Laden go after? Big building, two buildings, large number of potential victims. They look for value. Now, favorite targets of robbers are convenience stores and taxi drivers. It's not too hard to figure out why. Both are easy to find and convenient to the crook. In fact, they had these two, just to let you know, they had two guys in Denver that have called taxis to the location in order just to rob the driver. Now, you got to be careful now because of Uber, all right? Now, I know some of these are now using credit cards and things of that nature, but some of them may be dealing with cash. I don't know. I don't deal with Uber. I'm just saying, use your heads if you're an Uber driver as well. But those are all highly visible targets. Don't you be a visible target by going to an ATM at night. You got to go to the ATM, go during the day. All right? Terrorists, I can tell you, also like visibility, but in a slightly different way. They want a target that will generate a lot of publicity. Remember what I told you a few weeks ago about Al-Qaeda, differences between Al-Qaeda and ISIS? That's what I was talking about. They like big issues, big explosions. It gets on the news. And, of course, the media, they'll show that over and over and over again. They don't realize the terrorists that did that, they're loving it. If they show that over 20 times, they are absolutely loving it. Now, let's talk about visibility. They always like a visible target. Crooks have to know it is there, and an attack must generate the kind of visibility a terrorist wants. Schools, landmarks, crowded venues. That's what offers that kind of media attention and visibility. And that's what I'm talking about with the media. The media, to me, sometimes, I mean, the media is the media, and I get it. And the first thing they always want to talk about is their First Amendment rights. And I understand that. Okay, freedom of press, I got it. Okay, but in the same token, when you keep showing these things over and over and over again, all you're doing is inciting these people to want to do this because you're giving them the attention. It's like for those of you that are baseball fans, remember, or even football fans, remember when they used to have where the person was running around on the field and then the camera was following the person around because they were interrupting the game? Remember that? They don't do that anymore. So now less and less people are doing it because they know that they can't get on TV. That's what I'm talking about. Now, the third way that they look at this, okay, to find out whether you're a target, is vulnerability. Vulnerable. The victim must be susceptible to attack to be a worthwhile target. And that's what I tell, even at the end of the show, what do I tell you? Be a reluctant victim. That's what I'm talking about. Be a reluctant victim. Because the victim has to be susceptible to an attack, otherwise it's not worthwhile for them. And that's why burglars look for homes with unlocked doors, or muggers wait for victims in areas of poor lighting. Don't be in an area with poor lighting, even if you have to carry a small flashlight with you. There's an easy access, and the element of surprise is to help the attacker. Don't help your attacker. Terrorists need targets that are open to attack. I'll use 9/11 as an example again. It was relatively easy for them to hijack planes and fly them to the World Trade Centers as an example. Many of those vulnerabilities that the terrorists exploited back then have been eliminated, it's true. But let me just tell you, they will do what they have to do. So there you have it, guys, all right? Don't make yourself vulnerable to these things. Visibility is a big issue, and value. If there's no value for them, they're not going to do it, all right? So, you know, make sure that you put yourself in a good place. Don't be going to these ATMs. Make sure that if you're going to be away, you have people checking the house. The mail is not stacking up in your mailbox. All of those kind of things makes a difference, because these clowns, they will be looking for it. The last little piece that I wanted to talk to you about, that I told you about domestic terrorism, and this is going to kind of surprise you because people did not look at this as domestic terrorism, but I'm telling you it was. And who am I talking about? I'm talking about, if you're ready for this one, Bonnie Elizabeth Parker and Clyde Chestnut Barrow. Who am I talking about? Bonnie and Clyde. Believe it or not, okay, this was during the Depression era, but they killed police officers. They killed at least 9 police officers, and they killed an additional amount of civilians as well during their exploits between 1931 and 1934. Now, I know we've seen the movies on them, but think about the machine guns, the shotguns, and all of those kind of things. People don't look at these guys as domestic terrorists. But you have to understand, that's what they were doing. They were putting people in fear. And that was the bottom line. Now, I know that you know that when they got killed, everybody has seen the shootouts and things of that nature at the end when they lost their lives. Las Vegas used to have the bullet-ridden car with Bonnie and Clyde. Bonnie was 24 years old. Clyde was 25. Clyde had been in jail prior to that. There's a great movie out right now called The Highwayman, and this is kind of why I went ahead and decided to do this, because literally that was a form of domestic terrorism. So these crime sprees that people just overlook is another form of domestic terrorism. Now, I will say that Bonnie and Clyde, they were very popular with the American people for some reason, even with all of that killing. They looked at them as people that were, they were sensationalized. Again, by who? The media. The media, once again. So I guess this is my get on the media week, but it is what it is. Okay, you've been listening to Jim Potts on LA Talk Radio, and it's time to close out the show. I tell you, I always hate the end of the show, you guys, because now I got to wait for a whole nother week before I can talk to you. But let me remind you that you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/JimPottsAuthor. And be sure to join me next week. And do me a favor. If you like what you heard, spread the word. But until then, I want you to be aware. I want you to be vigilant. And I want you to be safe. But more importantly, I want you to be a reluctant victim. Talk to you next week. Have a safe week.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.